Hi there and welcome along to this racing postcast tipping edition. It is Friday the 27th of August. I'm Maddie Playle. I'm filling in for Bruce Millington this week and I'm joined by Mark Boylan and Keith Melrose, two Racing Post experts, to take us through the weekend's cards. First up, what have you both been up to this week? Mark, been anywhere interesting?
No, working from home, to be honest. You're very boring indeed, but keeping the head down, speaking to a few bits and pieces earlier in the week, or late into Irish Champions weekend. The build-up is just beginning to simmer here. Really looking forward to it. We had earlier in the week St. Mark's Basilica. There seems to be more optimism now that he will hopefully get there. And Tarnawa was also confirmed for the Irish Champions. So if that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what you're doing listening to this, because that'll be some race. And we also have plenty of depth to the race as well. I'd love to see Mishrif coming over, but it sounds like they might go elsewhere. But lots to look forward to over the coming weeks. Even this weekend mightn't be the most top class action, but there's plenty to be excited about.
Indeed there is. We'll get into that in just a very short while. Are you frustrated at the minute by the fact that still only 500 people can get on track?
Oh, obviously, geez, it's very, very frustrating. Look, you'd hope that in the next week there's going to be some sort of announcement from the government. You'd be very disappointed if there wasn't some sort of an ease for us. But I've been disappointed many times before. Look, I know the case has been made across the board that, you know, it's not tallying with other sports. It's not tallying. But the whole, there are many, many sectors in the country that are feeling the sort of unease that we feel as well at the situation. So it's not a racing only issue, but it is kind of hard to get your head around when, you know, as the obvious thing to compare to, we had 40,000 people at Croke Park last weekend for the All-Ireland Hurling Final, and we'll have 500 this weekend and every other day. So yeah, barring, you know, we get some sort of, as we expect to get more for Irish Champions weekend, let's say, or the Stowell Harvest Festival, hopefully. But yeah, it is bang your head off a wall stuff for the time being.
And Keith, you're off to the cricket this weekend.
Well, assuming we're recording this before lunch on Friday, and I'm assuming there's still some cricket to be played. I'll be at Headingley tomorrow, so dig in, India, and let me see some action.
That's enough of that, then. Let's get on to the racing. ITV's cameras are at Goodwood, where their feature is the Celebration Mile, the Group 2. We're going to start off with the 150 over 7 furlongs. It's the Tote Prestige Stakes, a Group 3 for two-year-old fillies. And this is a really good, deep, interesting race. The favourite is Dan A at around the 7-2 mark, then Hello You 9-2, 6-1 Clitheroe, 15-2 Tinderbox and Value Theory, and it's 8-1 Bar. Some good horses have won this race. Subsequent 1,000 Guineas winner Bilston Brook won it in 2017 and dual Group 1 winner Amazing Maria in 2013 as well. Do you think any of these can reach that sort of level, Keith?
I'm not so sure about that, Maddie, to be honest. But what I think that what you've just said tells us a little bit about this race is we're now at the point of the season where three-year-olds are winning these races, if you know what I mean. You know, horses that are going to train on, that are going to be better horses next year. And that, to me, gives Danny a pretty big edge on Hello You, who has already run 4 times. She obviously she ran in the Albany at Royal Ascot, finished second. You feel like she's already reaching a peak, whereas Danny hasn't done so yet. She's only run twice. She won at Kempton and then went over for a Group 3 at Deauville. Now, in France, they're providing sectionals as a matter of course now, and Danny ran the last 3 furlongs of that race faster than anything. I did a bit of quick arithmetic on my phone and it was 109% finishing speed. There was a sub-11 second furlong. I need to get myself really au fait with the pars at Deauville, but by any measure, just about that's fast. She's obviously not been suited by that test of speed at 7 furlongs because she's by Dubawi out of Rosina, who was more of a miler when in time she won the Coronation Cup, I think. But she also won a Group 1 at 2, so she's very much bred to be a good horse. She's bred to keep going into the autumn and through into next year. She's just exactly the sort of horse that wins this sort of race. I was impressed by how she kept on in the circumstances at Deauville. She absolutely deserves to be favourite for this for me.
Okay, and Mark, I think we're anticipating that the ground's going to be pretty good, not much rain about, is that right?
Looks that way from this stage of proceedings, Maddie, and to be quite honest, I don't think it's going to be an issue for Danny. I'm pretty sweet in her. She'll be one of my more bullish outs this weekend too. A key point is that Deauville race as well, she missed the start. She's given them a couple of lengths straight away and she didn't even get the clearest of runs. I'm not saying that she was unlucky, let's say that she was crying out for a gap late on, but just it went so smoothly for Oscula, the winner, and I don't think it panned out for her. And I'd echo pretty much what Kukita said in terms of natural progression. The likes of Hello Yua have a lot of time for her, but you know, she was keen enough. I think it was in the Duchess of Cambridge, and they put 100 last time. We'd just be concerned over 7, but I do think she's smart. You know, Misha Unseen, if that's how we're pronouncing it correctly, you know, I thought that was a nice debut, but I don't think she's achieved as much as Dania has, and yeah, it'd be pretty sweet in her.
Misha Unseen's form, yeah, that hasn't worked out well at all. The one I was interested in was Prosperous Voyage, given that my other selection, Honey Sweet, isn't likely to run, I don't think. I think you can mark up Rafe Beckett's filly on her last run. If you watch that back on our website, you'll see that she was certainly given a lot to do. On to the 225 again at Goodwood, and again over the 7 furlongs. This a handicap. And Clive Cox has got a really strong hand in this. I actually got off the phone with him this morning and he gave me a line on both Aratus and Dance Fever. Aratus, as a 3-year-old getting weight, he's going to be dangerous in a race like this, isn't he, Keith?
Yes, he is. You know, he is that sort of, at this stage of the season, you're still looking for these unexposed 3-year-olds. He's a horse that's what? He's won 3 of his 4 starts, finished 2nd on the other, run-to-run progress. Really doesn't take much finding, does he? And he could be the sort of horse that makes a little bit of a mockery of this race. But what I would just want to point out about it in this race is that you've got, it's a class 2, sort of open-ended, but really, barring your top 3, it's a not to 100, very competitive not to 100, no question, but it is one. You've got Accidental Agent, Oh This Is Us. And the horse that I'm actually going to put up, which is Escobar, he was declared for the Celebration Mile, but they declared him for 2. They thought, no, stick him in the big field handicap over 7 instead. That is another obvious call. That takes less finding than the favourite here, because Escobar's a free goer, got loads of form in these big field handicaps. He was 3rd recently in the Golden Mile here to Maidani and lost 2nd basically on the last few strides. He's one of those 7-furlong, 8-furlong horses. He needs that big field to settle down. He's got loads of form in them, and this will be weaker than the vast majority. You know, if this was a top handicap, you'd say maybe he's a little bit exposed, Escobar. But in a race like this that is just that notch below those top handicaps, I think he's certainly worth going in a little bit each way on. And I think there's value in the win there. He's about 15-2 as we're looking just now.
Yeah, I was going to repeat that. 15-2 for Keith's fancy Escobar. Aratus 5-2. Dance Fever, Clive Cox's other horse, 4-1. Aurafar 15-2. Kimmy 5, 12-1. And Persuasion as well. And the old boy, Accidental Agent, at a bigger price with the legend that is Oh This Is Us. Speaking about Clive Cox, he won this race last in 2019. Do you think he can do it again, Mark?
Yeah, he's obvious as one that looks kind of on that sort of trajectory that he could just still be well handicapped. I tell you what, I'm just going to take a chance on Kimmy 5 at the prices. Look, hard to catch right sometimes, but he does like Goodwood. I think, looking earlier, I think 3-1-0-6-2-3 from his 6 appearances there, and his last win was off this mark at Goodwood as well, over the same distance. I just think ground's going to suit him. He was running well off higher marks last year, and this has the potential to be a little bit tactical, and he has the gears for 6, so I think he's going to get himself out of trouble. It's his first start for David Bridgewater, you know, change of scenery. There's 4 places out there and he's 12-1 sort of price. I think he could run well. Like, listen, it's just trying to get beyond the obvious of Aratus, but just if this got a little bit tactical, I'd like one that's pretty streetwise. I think Kimmy 5 is. And Escobar has been a favourite of mine, but just I think the hurly-burly of those big races suits him. We've got 10 runners here. Maybe it'll pan out for him, but he wouldn't be a shock winner by any means in my eyes either. But just take a chance on Kimmy 5 at the prices.
Yeah, David Bridgewater, of course, more known for his horse over jumps. He told me he's gone out and bought a new shirt for this meeting because he's not a good word. The 3 o'clock is over a mile and 6 furlongs. It's the Tote March Stakes, a Group 3, and some really good stayers have won this in recent years. Mark Johnson had Sir Ron Priestley win it in 2019 and Subjectivist last year, and he has Dancing King, who was just agonisingly denied a week ago at Chester in a listed race. But he isn't favourite. That's Nagano, who won at the glorious meeting. Very short now, evens. Dancing King 7-2, Classic Lord 6-1, as well as Juan del Montalban and White Pepper is a bigger price. Keith, what's your view on Nagano? Because I feel like he could be a bit of a Marmite horse. He makes it look hard work, but he was ultimately very impressive last time.
It was, and you know, he's obviously done it at the track as well. That's in a big field handicap, so there's not an awful lot that you can really crab about the form. I think he just wins this possibly because I'm not so certain about a lot of these horses in here. Now, Juan de Montalban, I'll mention, he's one you really don't know about. He went from Balding, he went across to Biondi in Italy, finished 2nd in the Italian Derby, and has come back for David O'Mara. that could, you know, what's that do? What's happening there? I couldn't tell you exactly what's going to be going on with him, but I know O'Mara sometimes when he brings him back from abroad, they take a couple of runs to get going again. Dancing King, his run last week behind Yes Yes, that was a really, really messy race. He had handicappers beaten just a couple of lengths, but that's because of the steady pace they went. Dancing King was on the front. His best form remains that Doncaster run where he beat Kondo with Sammy, but I thought that was really strong form. It's taken knock after knock since, and I'm on the verge of pulling it down, to be quite honest, because I'm not so sure it's worth that anymore. That gives Nagano quite a big edge on form if that turns out to be the case, and even money for me looks entirely justified as long as he does stay. His pedigree is less encouraging than his way of racing in terms of staying this trip, but you've got to suggest he will, especially in a sort of small field race, and yeah, he's got a big form edge.
Okay, you said about Wanda Montalban, interesting move, him coming back to this country. The horse who won the Italian Derby, Tokyo Gold, has since finished second to Bolshoi Ballet out in the States, so I think that's decent form, and I'm with you, I think he's a real good horse to keep an eye on, maybe with regards to a big staying handicap in the future. Mark, what's your view on this one?
Yeah, just on Wanda Montalban, like, I mean, the winner pulled well clear, and I just thought he sent out kind of mixed messages in terms of stamina and that day. Like, it was over a mile and three. Thought he travelled up real well and then just looked one pace. Maybe a strongly run mile and a half will suit him, but I'm not totally jumping up and down about the setup to a mile and six for him. Maybe I've read him wrong, limited evidence, but ultimately, I think, you know, it's this race is going to pan out to suit a horse like Dancing King, and Mark Johnson going for a third win in a row in the race. You know, and I think there's excuses that you can make, you know, for little blips here and there. Like, the race really wasn't a suit after a slow start in the Queen's Vase. And, you know, Bahrain Trophy Run was obviously very good, and he seemed to read in the comments that he was awash with sweat. You know, took time to kind of get into a bit of a relaxed rhythm. I don't know, I just think in this sort of tactical race, I'd like to be prefer to be handy than trying to make me ground from off the pace. And Nagano, I'd have to respect him, obviously, and he is a common force. He is a horse. I do like that style of race. But just in a five-runner race, you know, I'd like to buck out good and handy. And I think he could steal a march to them here. Classic Lord still has £10 to find them. While he is progressive, he'll need to keep improving. You know, I just think Dancing King, he's a rock-solid option. 7-2 looks value to me.
I just did come in there, Mark, with the classic. You're talking about the tactical nature of the race. And you're right about Classic Lord, by the way. I can't fancy him because he's got so much to find. But the two races he's won last, the last twice at Sandown, they've both been perfect dress rehearsals for this in terms of, you know, being slow races that quicken up late. Yeah, absolutely. And he beat Annandale Neck last time. It could have been more. And obviously the time before he was second to Vinovictrix, that one he was second, that's possibly the hottest staying handicap of the year. Everything came out in one next time. Everything that's running, it's rated about half a stone higher now. It's a really, really hot bit of form. And I think he's still in the St. Ledger, possibly. He was last I checked. And he would make suit the tactical element, but you've got to take a leap of faith in terms of his actual ability.
I think that's going to be a really interesting race, but the odds are it won't be as good as the 3:35, which is the feature, the Tote Celebration Mile, the Group 2. And we've got an interesting conundrum here because Ben Battley's coming back off another considerable layoff, 337 days. He leads the market at roughly 11-4 for a Shea Murphy sighted Bin Sarul. Then we have Richard Hannon's Chindit and Charlie Hills' Mutter Sarbeck at 4-1. Perotto double that price. Duke of Hazard is 12-1 along with Happy Power, and it's 16-1 bar. How do you assess this race when you first look at it, Mark? Do you try and find a way to get Ben Battle beat, or do you think he's just the class act?
Jeez, I thought this is the toughest race we're going to preview here. It was the one I was least kind of bullish on, to be quite honest. I'd love to tell you now that I was singing and dancing about one of them, but Ben Battle, I think if he produces his very best, he will win. But whether he's able to do that off the back of such a break, not even the fact that you can look back and see that he has done it fresh before or off similar gaps, but as a seven-year-old, things just get harder. The body is a little bit older, getting sharper straight away. It's not the same as it might have been a couple of years ago when he was trying to do it. And that would be my concern. Like, I think he's the most naturally talented, and I do like, you know, rock solid element to him. But just in terms of hard fitness, you know, a horse like Chindit comes in getting a handy pull at the weights, taking a drop in class, having faced some tough tests. And I actually thought there was a lot of promise to be taken from the run in the Jacques Le Marois. We're talking about the Jacques Le Marois as one of the races of the season. You know, this is a definite drop in class for him. And probably with race fitness on his side and a nice pull at the weights, if you're putting a gun to my head, I'd say Chindit. But it revolves around whether Ben Battle can be at his absolute best as a seven-year-old on seasonal bow after nearly a year out. And to me, that kind of has the makings of a no-bet race, to be quite honest. But, you know, Pogo could run by at a price if you're looking for an each-way one. But I'm sure Keith will have a more bullish view than me.
I'm sure he will. But I think that's a fair point to make, because lots of these are rated similar. Lots of them could run well if everything drops right. One of those could be Duke of Hazard. He has an exceptional record at the track. I quite like Perotto as an improving three-year-old. Keith, what's your view?
Yeah, it is a very interesting race. Now, Ben Battle, he was meant to run in this race last year as his reappearance, and he skipped it. I think the ground went too soft for him or something, and he turned up in the Joe Stakes instead. That was nearly a month later, and he still, if anything, looked like he might have just about needed that run. So I can definitely see the case about him needing it. 11-4 is almost tempting. You know, he's the sort of horse I expected to see about 7-4 and go, right, I'm going to get tucked into him and I'm going to get him beat. 11-4 makes me a little bit less keen on that, because on class, he really should be that sort of price and a lot shorter. But the one I agree with you, Maddie, the one I'm going to back is Perotto. He has been looking like a horse that's going to step up into group class, basically since he won at Royal Ascot when he won the Britannia. It took him a few goes to get it right. He was behind Baid in the Thoroughbred Stakes at Goodwood, and then finished third in the Sovereign Stakes at Salisbury. Big stiff finish at Salisbury, and he just sort of ran out of puff a bit late on. Still a career best effort. He has got course form. He won a 7 furlong handicap here before he turned up at Royal Ascot and won. So I've got no qualms about the track. And it's a sort of race where, you know, you've got, even if you want to do each way, there's the option of the third place. Perotto only needs to find £2 or £3 of improvement, and he's a three-year-old that's only just not long out of handicaps. I think you can take that improvement on. I'm absolutely delighted that he's double the price of Muta Sabek, who for me yet is not, you know, he's all promise so far. You know, he's a bit all mouth and no trousers to date, but Perotto is showing it and is double the price. It looks the best each way bet in the race to me.
A real cracker at that Celebration Mile. Now we're going to take a quick pull soon, but next up is Beverley, where as well the ITV cameras will be keeping their eyes on the action, and Keith thinks he's spotted one in the 205.
Download the brand new Racing Post Progeny Tracker, the only tracker of its kind, giving you the ability to track unnamed racehorses by any sire or dam, and you can also get easy access to sales information. You can download it for free on the App Store by searching Progeny Tracker.
Welcome back to this Friday postcast. And as promised, we're going to go over to Beverley. There's the Beverley Bullet, the listed race, a real historic sprint, that one. But first, let's get tucked in to the 205 over the 10 furlongs. William Hill, Silver Cup. And this, more often than not, throws up a very good horse. Keith, you think you've spotted one. Reveal who it is and why.
Yeah, it's a warm race. And look, there's lots of horses that could just go on and improve stones and stones. But the one that I think it caught a lot of people's eyes last time was Life on the Rocks in his first start for Richard Fahey. Now, he ran at Ripon. He ran in June for Kevin Ryan, and he went and got sold after that. Fahey and Freddie Talicki bought him for, I think, 80,000 guineas. And he's turned up at Ripon on his first start for the yard, opened 13-2, gone off 12s, and out the back, struggling from a long way out. For 9 furlongs of those 10 furlong race, he looked like he was going to finish last and by clear water. He stayed on to finish third or sixth, only beating a couple of lengths. Hannigan, I think he gave him a couple of taps, 3 out, and after that, he decided that was enough for him. Just guided him home, and he's finished third in that race. He's actually bred to suit a mile two and beyond, if anything. So he's got that potential for the trip up, for stepping up in trip as well. Beverley's stiff finish is probably going to be a lot more to his liking than Ripon, which is actually a track that lends itself to specialists. It's like anybody who plays links golf, you know, the little humps and hollows in the fairways there. That's what Ripon can be a little bit like. And it means that some horses cope with it and some don't. It looks like Life on the Rocks didn't. And I think he's got a lot of improvement to come.
Okay, I certainly bought that argument myself. Richard Fahey won the race in 2016 and 2017 with Dolphin Vista and Society Red. Are you convinced, Mark, by Keith's case?
It's a good case, and he was very eye-catching. Like, he really, really, like, you thought he was going nowhere for large stretches of that. And yeah, it was very encouraging to see him come home like that. Just, I think, from a race kind of experience point of view, The two Johnson horses are probably most intriguing to me here, with March Law off the back of such a layoff. You can't really touch him, but Mr. Excellency, I think, is still on a fair mark. Just if you watch back his last run, it's just blindingly obvious that he got caught up in a pace duel that was just in no way sustainable. But, you know, I thought he was previously progressive prior to that. He was running against horses in the 90s and, you know, a 101 horse last time. He's the second highest rated here, so it is a drop in class. You know, the one I probably would fear most would be Barn Owl. You know, I think he's obviously a Frankel out of Thistlebird, who was always improving at race, and she won the Pretty Polly on her last start as a six-year-old, if I remember right. And, you know, that's a horse, this Barn Owl, best days are still going to be ahead of him. But just cheek pieces on, I thought it was a funny one, in the sense that if the two Johnson horses go forward, sitting behind might just get a little bit lit up. Charlton's horses are running well now. I think he's had two winners and sixth place from his last 14 runners. A couple of fourths in there as well. But I just thought from a solid point of view, and been able to draw a line through a run that makes him value, Mr. Excellency at around 9 or 10 to 1. You know, when I was coming down on either Barn Owl or Mr. Excellency, five times the price, that was where I was swaying. So he just gets the nod from me.
Yeah, Barn Owl 5-2, Titian 9-2, Farron 11-2, Life on the Rocks, Keith's Fancy at 7s, March Law, who Mark mentioned, 15-2, alongside No Recollection, and Mr. Excellency, the Rag of the Field, at 10-1. Now, the William Hill Beverly Bullet Sprint Stakes is on export of call at 3:15. Really historical sprint, and lots of old favourites in this race, including the last two winners in Dakota Gold and Judicial. The latter is leading the market at 4-1, Dakota Gold 5-1, Hurricane Ivor at 6s, Tis Marvellous, and significantly around the 7-1 mark, and it's 12-1 bar. This is quite trappy, isn't it, Mark?
It is, yeah. I'm actually quite strong on Judicial. I was really, really encouraged to see him come back to form last time. You know, at the age of 9, you sometimes with these sprinters that they can go on for quite a long time, but just when it starts to flicker, maybe in terms of the enthusiasm, you start to get, I get guessy, but I was really encouraged to see him go back and do that at Chester earlier in the month. This is a place that suits him well. Ultimately, 6 might suit him a shade better than 5, but I think ground is going to be right up his street, and Dakota Gold, very different set of circumstances in terms of ground this time around than last year. And, you know, ultimately, Dakota Gold is £1 better off than official handicap ratings with Judicial, but the ground would sway it in Judicial's favour for me. It's a race that's been kind to veterans. I think in the last 9 years, you've had a couple of 10-year-olds, an 11-year-old, an 8-year-old and a 7-year-old. You know, it wouldn't put me off. I like a low draw here as well. I think when it gets easy ground, no problem coming towards the stand side in this race. But, you know, I think Judicial is in the right sort of place in 5. Dakota Gold and Hurricane Ivor a little bit high. Just Another Bottle could run well here. Like, I mean, he has a little bit to find on ratings, but I was really impressed with what he did at Ripon, and like, he's clearly in good form. The blinkers really sharpened him up. Now maybe if he's hassled here over a little bit shorter, it could be less comfortable for him. But if he got rolling now on his own over there, I'd definitely be concerned about him. But Judicial is the one to beat.
Fabulous. Now, Keith, this race and the race we're going to look at next, which is the 6 furlong listed Hopeful Stakes at Newmarket, both of them could have impacts on big handicap sprints later on in the season. Any of these sort of strike you as being ones to watch?
For big handicap sprints, they're not races I plan for long in advance, Maddie, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, I do enjoy them, but they're the sort of races that, you know, I'll take it as a nice little bonus that presents itself in front of me on a Friday morning, rather than the sort of races that I'll be looking out for months in advance. But it's actually a handicapper that I fancy in this race. I've been lucky enough, I've been to Beverley. Beverley's a lovely town. The track's got a really nice setting. I've been lots of times. I've even walked from the town up to the race course. So I've walked up the hill that runs parallel to the last 5 furlongs. And even I was surprised when I went and did this earlier this year on Google Earth to find out how much the rise is over the last 3 furlongs at Beverley. It's 45 feet, which is the highest I've seen, I think, anywhere. It's a really stiff finish. And I think
how did you fare? Were you running out puff at the end or finishing strongly?
I was walking up, and there's I've got a long stride, you see. So I've never figured out what long strides. Maybe one day. Not yet, Mark. You've got to... you've got to get to more advanced stages before you start getting the tubes put in. But anyway, it is a really stiff finish at Beverley. And it seems like the sort of thing that Hurricane Ivor is just going to gobble up to me. You saw how he finished in that 5.5 furlong race at York behind Copper Knight. We know Copper Knight's a very fast horse, and he did the very York thing as he skipped on, and they don't catch them. York just seems to be like that. Hurricane Ivor was a little bit more steady about it, but finished very, very strongly. He's obviously been a bit of a revelation this year. He's improved an awful lot. His two best runs prior to that York run were at Sandown and Ascot. Guess what? Stiff finishes, but probably not as stiff as Beverley's, just in terms of topography. And I just think he's got a wee bit to find. But if he's going to find that amount of progress against Dakota Gold, who I thought was a bit disappointing in the non-thought, to be honest, even though he was an outsider, and Judicial, I think he's got a chance of making that improvement.
Okay, more sprinters now. We're going to go over to Newmarket for the 2:45. The Close Brothers Hopeful Stakes, a listed race, and the market centering around Tab Deed, who's rated 110. He's 2-1. Royal Crusade has been gelded for the first time at 6s. Summergown, that old favourite, 13-2. Cardem with blinkers for the first time at 8-1. And Royal Scimitar also at the same price. Chief of Chiefs, one horse that's driven me up the wall in recent weeks at 11-1 and 12-1 bar. Mark, how do you assess them in this race? Because on form and probably on the figures, Tab Deed is clear, but he's not always the most straightforward proposition.
No, probably not. But it's how I've been driven up the wall. I'd say if you'd backed Royal Scimitar at the Shergar Cup meeting, I'd say your hair has still been picked up off the ground from pulling it out, because he was the eye catcher of all eye catchers then. And, you know, to still be at 97 here and to be going for a listed race, I thought it was a big handicap to own with him, so I'm disappointed to see him here. But he is entitled to turn up and have a say, even though he's wrong at the weights with some of these. I just thought Tab Deed was the most, you know, you look at on ratings, it's a drop in class for him, you know, albeit I wasn't totally enamoured by what I saw in the Hackwood. It was a grand run and he wasn't beaten far at all. I just think if he turns up with his A game, he's clearly the best horse here. Summergand is one that if there was market support for him, you know, I think he was dropped a couple of pounds for his last run, and he's sort of one that if he was to drop another couple of pounds here, he'd be interested in a big handicap again, and that'd be more interesting to me than here, you know, with a group penalty. So I think just process of elimination, Tab Deed is the best horse here and should win.
Right, so speaking of Royal Scimitar, price-wise, Tom Siegel put him up for the Air Gold Cup, hence why I mentioned those big handicaps in our previous section. Keith, Royal Crusade's a horse I've always liked. I thought he had a lot of potential, but he's not really delivered on that. I wonder if gelding could be the making of him.
I wouldn't know. There's gelding, obviously, the vast majority of horses, certainly male horses, get gelded in time, and only on about 5% of those would I have an opinion on what gelding will do to them. In fact, there was a horse that ran this week, ran on Thursday. The Governor, that got gelded. That's a horse that I've got an opinion on getting gelded. I think it'll benefit that horse in time, because I think he's a bit of a thinker and he was ready to lose a couple of things. But Royal Crusade, I'd have no opinion.
I
do agree with the general point you're making, that he has disappointed this year, hasn't he? The only time he's really turned up, it was in Dubai, and sometimes that form can be a little bit hooky. Tab Deed has never taken his racing that well. He's been a very, very lightly raced horse throughout his career. Summergand, great old horse, but hasn't looked in great form recently. Cadem's a little bit another one like Royal Crusade that hasn't really gone on this year like you thought he would. And I think the hope that Royal Scimitar can ruin his price for the Ungold Cup by running really well here. The last two runs, I'm sure if you've read Tom Siegel's piece, you'll know all about this already, but his last two runs have been desperately unlucky. He won his side at the July meeting by 2.5 lengths when he was fourth. So that's a horse that was up against it from where he was that day. And he won his side, well, he won a walkover on his side at Ascot and Shergar Cup Day, actually, because nothing else raced down that stand side, only he did. And he was only beaten basically in a bit of a head bobber. He's got more than that in his locker, I'm absolutely sure of it. And if he improves by, you know, a length on that, say 2 lengths, he's in the mix here with all the sort of doubts you have about the horses in front of him. So yeah, I think Royal Scimitar is the bet in this race.
Okay, could be worth taking a chance on Clive Cox's horse. Anything else on Saturday, Mark? I'll go over to you.
Yeah, a little bit of a quieter weekend here. Just the one meeting at Navan on Saturday. Quite sweet on Celestial Horizon for Joseph O'Brien. It's a 45-70 handicap, restricted to 3-year-olds only over a mile and six. I just thought he was standing out as one that would actually enjoy coming up to this trip, whereas others, I feel, kind of, I won't say they're running out of options, but, you know, I'm not too sure on pedigree or visually that it's exactly what they're crying out for. He's by Fastnet Rock, and he's from a family that has plenty of stamina in the pedigree. I think his dam is a sister or a half-sister to King Fisher, who was a runner-up in the Gold Cup at Ascot. And his last run at Leopardstown, you know, he's gradually finding his feet. He's one of these Joseph O'Brien horses that just with time, with runs, seems to be getting the hang of things. And I was more encouraged by what I saw there. I think the runner-up, Moon Daisy, went on and won a handicap of the Racing League at Doncaster since, you know, has been running against elders the last twice, now comes into 3-year-old only company and gets the step up and trip that he wants up to a mile and six. I thought he'd be very, very solid in the 4:15 at Navan, Celestial Horizon. And maybe just wanted to give a shout to as well in the last as well, Inquire Within. Now, it's low grade stuff in terms of a race, but Amer is just getting the hang of things lately as well. You know, doesn't have a huge amount of miles on the clock for her age, but she like a strong pace. She like coming up and tripping. I think, you know, you got Charge in here, who's always goes forward. Dollar value, clever currency, they can race handy. And I just think that she'll get the pace she wants. She can pick them off. Seems to get confidence by passing horses. And, you know, off a basement mark, she should go well, and she might be a little bit of a price. So Inquire Within in the 4:50 at Navan, but the more bullish one would be Celestial Horizon in the 4:15 at the same place.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Mark. Some good cards on Saturday. Obviously, Goodwood, Beverley, and Mark touched upon Navan there, but also Newmarket towards the evening, Cartmel, Redcar, Windsor, and a whole host of international grade ones. Keith, anything take your eye?
Yeah, my nap's actually running in one of the non-telly races at Goodwood, but I'll come to that, obviously, when we do the naps. Just wanted to point out, well, obviously, there's good racing at Windsor, which I'd point out. To watch that, it was in the afternoon last year, those races, that card, but it's in the evening now, so do watch out for Windsor. And at Newmarket in the 3:55, you've got the would have been Ebor favourite Live Your Dream is running in the 3:55 at Newmarket instead, just to let people know about that one. He's short and he probably deserves to be, you know, he's up against horses like Dancing Harry won last time, but nothing else turned up in that four runner race. Speedo Boy has had his turn, I think, potentially for the year, or for now. You know, he's had his little rise for winning at Ascot, and he's run well at Nottingham since. But, you know, if you're a horse that was going to supposedly go well in an Ebor, you're going to be beating horses like that. So watch out for Live Your Dream. He had looked like a horse that was really going places, and yet he might not be on the telly, but yeah, if you backed him for the Ebor anti-post, you might want to take a look what you might have won.
That's horrible. Maybe you'll want to just see the result and then your heart will be broken afterwards and Live Your Dream. But he still is a horse full of potential. We're going to take another quick break now. Back in a second with the naps.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
It's Saturday nap time on this Tipping Postcast.
This will not be beaten.
Here we are then. Keith, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, so the 4:45 at Goodwood. We've all got one of these horses, and we have them probably every year. The sort of horse that you just want to put your arm around their shoulder and say, now, come on, mate. You've cost me an absolute packet this year, but let's go this one last time. I do believe in you. And for me, that horse, probably more so for Graham Rodway, but for me, that horse this year a little bit has been Indianapolis, who runs in the 4:45 at Goodwood. I put him up on price-wise for the Shergar Cup Stairs last time. He finished sixth, but he was never a one. He shaped like he could have been placed. He got left on quite a bit to do. Before that, he had been running in sort of class two, class three handicaps, finishing maybe just on the cusp of the places. He's just a bit slow, to be quite honest, but he's running in a staying race here. He's never run in a handicap below a 0-95 before today. This is a 0-85. It is by quite a way the lowest grade handicap that Indianapolis has ever run in. And early prices, you're getting about 13-2. I think that is a smashing price. And, you know, I won't be putting the arm on the shoulder next time, because you'll have had your chance after this Indianapolis, if you're listening. But I will give him one more chance quite a significant class drop in that race at Goodwood.
He's a tipster's horse, isn't he, Indianapolis? I swear, even Tom Siegel's tipped him up a few times. I've had a couple of bets on him in my time. He needs to deliver now, as you say, Keith. Mark, your banker.
Oh, jeez, I've been down that road in Indianapolis too. I know the pain, but yeah, I can definitely see it's a clear case for him. Give me Judicial anyway for the nap and the Beverly Bullet. Get the old boy roll back the years and give us another good one. 3:15 Beverly Judicial.
I'd really enjoy that. I'm sure I wouldn't be the only one now. Any fancies on Sunday? Goodwood, they carry on. They have the Group 3 Supreme Stakes. And at Deauville, they also have the Grand Prix de Deauville as well as two other Group 3s. So could be interesting. Any thoughts, Mark?
Not particularly, Maddie. No, we've got no Irish racing on Sunday and I have been dedicating my my time and resources to that. So I'd be lying to you if I said I had a bullish one for the weekend. But it'd be interesting to see how things unfold in France particularly.
Do you know what I'm interested in? And again, I'm not going to ask you a question here and dob you in it, but Japan, he's running in the Sword Dancer at Saratoga tomorrow. That's he's been frustrating, to say the least, hasn't he?
Yeah, to be honest, I was encouraged to see him stick his neck out and do what he did at Leopardstown. Now, listen, in terms of, I thought this fellow was top notch, and I'm sure a lot of people did once upon a time. Like I thought he nearly, in different circumstances, he might have gone close to winning the Arc the year of his Judmont win. Like he's not the horse he was hoped that he once would be. But to do it over a mile and one last time, that would give me encouragement now that, you know, sharp enough kind of mile and a half around Saratoga that he'll have. You know, we've seen Irish horses go over there, and Charlie Appleby has gone over there with different horses over to New York and he's enjoyed success. So, like, I mean, there's good, solid campaigners there in against them. Your channel makers, etc., that turn up to all these big mile and a half, mile and a quarter grade ones in the States on turf. And Gufo is a horse I've always liked over there too. But I'd find it hard to put anyone off him, but I'd find it hard to recommend anyone to go and bring the credit union either.
Yeah, that's the Travers Stakes card, the Sword Dancer at 10:25 at tomorrow night. Keith, any thoughts on Sunday's action?
Well, there's no Irish races for Mark and there's no staying races for me. So, yeah, I didn't have anything on Sunday there. I had a very quick look at the Grand Prix de Deauville. That's turned out to be, I'm going to say that's a disappointing field. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, you know. I'll probably have a, well, I'll be, if we get a few of these plate heading Sunday, I won't be in that state to do much on Sunday at all. So, it won't be much betting going on either way.
Okay, that's all good. Keeping your powder dry, responsible gambling, we're all for it. That's all we've got time for on today's show. As usual, please make sure to rate, review and subscribe. Give us a comment wherever you're listening to us from. We'll be back next week. I won't be in the chair as far as I'm aware, but I will be back on Monday. So see you then.